And welcome to another edition of the E-Factor, brought to you by the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development here in Frankfort, Indiana. So glad to be with you. Shan Sheridan, I'm the director of the chamber and your host for the E-Factor. And let's not forget what the E-Factor stands for. The E-Factor is the E-tributes of our community, not the attributes, but the E-tributes: engagement and education and entertainment, encouragement, empowerment, all those things that we that start with an E that kind of make our community go. And today, we're going to be talking not only about engagement and not only about empowerment, but we're going to talk about equality a little bit today, because we have been really struggling with that word, and certainly in our country with that attitude. And so today I have a very special guest. I have known this young lady for several years. She moved to Frankfort, Indiana several years ago and was involved in a local business here. And I got to meet her through that. Always a sweet-spirited person. She is a person of a different color than I am. And one of the reasons that I have asked her to be a part of our E-Factor tonight, or today, this week, whenever you're listening this morning, that to share with her, share with you her perspective of what's happening. We just recently finished a prayer service in our downtown, which she felt led to ignite, really. She started the whole thing with an email, and thank God people were listening, and it was able to materialize. So with having said all of that, I want to welcome to the E-Factor Thaya Sterrett. Thaya, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. Well, Thaya, I know this is a little unusual. I know, because I kind of sprung all of this on you. Like,
yes,
this
you
has
did.
Been a this has been a whirlwind. But Thaya, you how long have you been in Frankfort, Indiana?
Oh my goodness, probably close to 30 years.
30.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we moved here when my oldest son was in second grade, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been.
Well, let's tell us about your family. You have a family, of course.
I do. I have five children, and I'm married. My husband's name is Stu Sterrett. We have a young daughter. Her name is Macy, who goes to the Frankfort High School.
Uh-huh.
And then my four kids are grown, and they live throughout. One lives in Colfax, one lives in Stockwell. Stockwell,
yeah.
And then Lafayette and West Lafayette.
So. Fairly close, though.
Yes,
That's good. That's good. So how do you and Steve keep up with all these kids? I mean, my Lord, you're running around all over the place.
We do run. Our 14-year-old keeps us busy, because she's very involved in athletics. And her freshman year, she was in cheer, so we were really never home. So
no,
we're
I
on
know.
The go all the time.
We are empty nesters now, but we have eight grandkids, and they keep us pretty engaged. We're out. Most of them go to Clinton Prairie School, so we live on the far north side of the county, but we go to the southwest part of the county to watch them play sports or sing concerts or dance. Or whatever the case. You know about all of that.
Yes, sir. Yes,
absolutely. Sir. Well, Thaya, prior to the 30 years of being in Frankfort, you were growing up in the South, right? I mean, you started off, and you were born in Mississippi, and then you moved to Indianapolis, right?
Correct. I was born in Mississippi and moved to Indianapolis. So when I was in Mississippi, I was a baby.
Okay.
Yeah. We moved to Indianapolis when I was in, I think, first or second grade. And we've been in Indiana ever since.
So you're a Hoosier.
Yeah, I'm a Hoosier.
Yeah.
I still consider Mississippi my home.
Birth home.
But yes, I am a Hoosier.
Yeah. That's like me. I was born in Louisiana, but 37 years of Indiana, you become a Hoosier.
Absolutely.
And I love Indiana. Indiana's a great state.
It is, except for the weather.
Of course, I took my wife down to Louisiana a few years ago, and she said, and I took her, unfortunately, during the summer months, and she goes, how does anybody survive the heat and the humidity of Louisiana? She said, I think you took me to hell. Anyway, we had a good time, but she was ready to come back more to, of course, Louisiana is known for their state bird, the mosquito, because it's as big as a bird. So, well, Thaya, enough talk about our maybe those southern roots. But, you know, we are going to talk a little bit about our roots. And you come from a very different background. You are black skin. You are a woman. I'm a white male. And when we are in looking in all of the situations that have taken place, you made a comment tonight. We just finished a prayer meeting in our community. Yes. And you had a chance to speak and share. And I thank you for your words tonight. But you did say something in your and speaking that really touched a nerve for me, because you said, this is kind of a long line of things. This is not just one instance. This has happened before. And what we're talking about is the injustice that took place with Mr. Floyd in that situation, and then those others that have also taken place. Tell me why did you say that? What made you say that tonight?
I feel like that some people are shocked by it. I don't know. This particular incident, it hit me hard, because it's not new. I mean, this is something that we've been fighting for years and years, and you know, people say, oh, it's gotten better, oh, it's changed. No, it has not. We are still in the same place. I think the difference now is it's more out in the open because of all the social media, and it's easier access, easier resources to get to. But for me, it's always been there. It's nothing new. And
so, when you say it's always been there, give me some instances or experiences that you've had personally growing up that you know, because I want folks to know in this very short 30-minute interview, I want people to recognize the intensity in your life, the emotion that goes on in being you know, maybe passed over or whatever the case may be. I don't know what your story is.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I've grown up in a predominantly white environment for most of my life. We lived in Indianapolis, and then we moved to Lafayette. And obviously in Lafayette, I was a minority in my school. I was one of four black kids in my school. I've been lucky for the most part. And I think that's part of why my dad, we used to move around a lot. And I think that was one of the reasons that my dad, because he was trying to keep me from all of that, keep me from the racism and the bigotry and all that. So we moved to Lafayette and West Lafayette. I love him for it, and I don't, because I think part of my weakness is have not being around or growing up in a black community. Because when I first went back, like if I'd go visit, it was a shock.
Yeah.
Just because I was because of the environment that I had been accustomed to, I guess. But my shock ended when I was in sixth grade and my best friend Natalie took me to Monticello to go. We were going to go spend the weekend there. I had to come home. Her dad called my dad and said, hey, I just want to let you know that there was a note on the door. Somebody approached him and told them that if they didn't get me out of there, that they were going to hurt me.
Wow.
So, you know, I was in sixth grade. I didn't know what was going on. My dad came to pick me up. I'm like, why am I leaving? I was kind of mad.
So they shielded me from it.
They were trying to, and you know, bless them. They were trying to protect me. They didn't want to hurt my feelings. But my dad told me, you know,
he told you then?
He told me there what was going on. And I cried a little bit because I just didn't understand it. But yeah, that was my first experience.
How did your dad tell you that? What did your dad tell you how old were you? You said 12?
Sixth grade,
sixth, so you're about 12 years old.
Yes.
Okay.
He was very honest. I knew we've had that conversation about my skin color and people not liking me from you know, because of the way I look. It just never hit me. It was never just there like that before.
Right.
And he was just very honest. He told me what was going on. He said, you know, my dad didn't care if I stayed, but I think it was more of her family because they were worried for my safety. Okay. They'd never been in that position before.
Right.
And he didn't want to keep them in that position as well. So I packed my stuff up and came home.
Wow.
They actually packed their stuff up and came home too. They didn't stay. They came home as well. But that was my first experience. You know, I told my husband, which I hadn't told him just last week, I was called the N-word. I was outside of my job putting out a sign. And I'm pretty, you know, with everything that's going on, it's not surprising, but it still shocked me.
So this was after the George Floyd incident?
Okay, yes, this was just last week.
Last week, okay.
It was a few days ago.
But
yeah, I was outside my work, putting up a sign at the, in the corner, and somebody just out the window and yelled the N-word. So that's what I mean. It's there. I think it's just more out in the open now because, like I said, because of social media, because of the resource, it's just so much easier to get to and see firsthand.
Right. Well, you know, we talk about bullying and we talk about all these kind of social issues that we deal with. But you bring up a great point, and with social media, it's in our face nonstop. I mean, your daughter has to deal with it, I'm sure, being in, you know, Snapchat and Twitter and I know they don't do Facebook. That's my that's the old people's place of communication. You know, that's us. But you know, the thing about it is social media. Because everybody has an opinion, and now it's just they're so readily available. They can just spout and spew anything they want to share, and sometimes we take that as personal. Thank God, it sounded like you didn't take that shouting, that derogatory remark to you personally, but it still hurts.
It did.
Yeah.
No, I didn't take it personally, but it hurt. I went to my office and sat, and I'm just like, you know, with everything going on, it's still there. It's not gone away. And right now with everything that's going on, it's not going to go anyway anytime soon. Just with the way that, I think I mentioned, you know, I am all for protests. I am all for you, standing up for what's right. You know, again, yell and scream, but you know, the violence part of it, it's not helping the situation.
Right.
I've not been scared before, and I'm more scared now than I ever have been, just because, and not only because of what happened with Mr. Floyd, just with the reaction, the interaction that we're having, it's not positive. You know, I feel like God is looking down at us and like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, I would agree, and I would take it another step that as God is looking at us, I think He's also saying, "Hey, I'm giving you some opportunity to get this thing figured out." Which brings me to the question, you know, this question to you: what do you think is the source of racism? Where in your heart, in your mind? And I'm not asking that this is not a right or wrong answer.
Right.
This is your answer. Where do you believe the source of racism comes from?
Fear. I think I mentioned we need to be open as far as communication. I think when people you're not talking about it, when it's in the back burner and you're not talking about it, how can it be anything else? I mean, if you're not learning about other people or learning about different cultures or different different races, you know, it's just not gonna get better.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a good thing in the back. I'm not saying that the Floyd thing, I'm not justifying that at all, but it's brought a lot of things out to the open.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to figure out how to talk about it.
Right.
How to communicate, because, you know, once we start, we can talk about it, then we can start the debates, and then we can start fixing stuff.
Right.
But, yeah, it's the hate that's going on right now. It's just...
Right. When you talk about the source or the root of racism, and we bring in hate that leads to rage, it leads to the indifference, I think... you know, I look at a situation, and I was sharing with you off the air a moment ago about my raising. You know, my family taught me respect all people. Well, my family taught me to respect life first and foremost. Life is precious. Don't ever take it for granted. Doesn't matter whose life. It doesn't matter if it's a bird. It doesn't matter if it's a person. It doesn't matter what skin color. It doesn't matter. Life is precious. It was God-breathed and God-given. So that really resonated with me growing up, because I remember getting a BB gun for Christmas one time, and I went out and you know, I thought I was going to be funny, and I don't know what I was thinking, but I shot a bird, and I'm thinking, then I realized I killed it, and I'm like, I didn't want to kill it. I just was shooting at it, but I killed it, and it did something to me. Now there's people that hunt, and there's nothing wrong with hunting, and I mean that's, but for me, it did something to me to say, you know, going back to what I was raised, the fundamental foundation of my life was, you know, life is precious, and you just took life away from this animal. Right. And so it changed my dynamic as I was growing up, and I saw the injustices of this in the South in the 60s and the 70s. And then what happened, Thaya, everybody wants to fix things. You know, that's one thing that I think that we struggle with, that we have people that want to fix things. And down in the South, we had the North pressuring that you're going to bus people, and we're going to integrate, and we're going to force you to sit on a bus with someone that you can't stand because you have had this, you've been raised to not like them. Right. And I got to believe that there's somewhere in the middle. I think it has to almost happen organically. It has to be genuine. It can't be fake. It can't be something that is a facade, just, oh, I'm going to like that person to get what I want or to get something out of it. People sense that, and there's a sincerity there, I think, that is important for all of us to. To me, it's the lack of sincerity, and in I think in all of this, of just, because even people say, again, we talked about this, we're all in this together. Well, we're not. I mean,
how can we be?
We can't be. We may be in the same ocean, but we're not in the same boat.
We're not in the same. I'm not you. You're not me. You're not dealing with the same things that I'm dealing with.
No.
And I'm not dealing with what you're dealing with.
That's right.
And that's, I think that's part of the problem, too, because people, I understand. Well, no, you don't.
I've even been guilty. I have said, look, I grew up in the South. I have black friends, but one of my best friends was Theo. I mean, I shared that with you off the air, but I don't know how he went to bed at night. I know how I went to bed at night. I went to bed knowing that I was okay. I was white, and I could go drink at the white fountain.
Did you ever ask him?
Yeah, you know, well, we did. We had those kind of conversations, you know. Well, and that's what made me feel so bad. That's why I challenged him, you know, one day. Come on, you're going to go here and drink over here. Of course, we got in trouble. But because the adults in the room were trying to teach, it was literally molding us to be a certain way and shaping us to be a certain way. And it's just sad that I think that there has been, because I think Pastor Fry prayed this tonight to this systematic. What do you think about that? What do you think about the systematic racism and when I'm talking about the adults that have kind of taught us, there is kind of a system. Would you agree or do you not agree? Is a systematic racism, or is it just really come down to hate, just plain old hate?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with hate, but
yeah,
I do. Yeah, I would agree that some of it is systematic.
Because why would somebody scream the N-word at you?
Right. I mean,
they don't know you.
Right. So that means that that's the way they were brought up. That's what they know. But where did, I mean, the person that they got it from, was it, did they get it from someone else, or
right.
did, you know, was it hate on their part?
And, yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think it is real hate in the world, and I think some people just, that's what they learn and that's what they know. That's what they were around. And
then they teach it to their own children.
Yeah.
They teach it to their own,
Because a kid doesn't grow up. A kid doesn't come out hating somebody for the color of their skin.
Right.
They have to learn that.
Right.
And that's where it starts. I mean, they have to learn that.
Right.
You know, we tell our daughter every day, you know, be a good person, you know, don't, you know, it just comes down to being a good person. Be a good person. Be, you know, be nice. Even if it's someone that you're not going to get along with, still, just be nice and recognize differences. Recognize the different people are different and the culture.
That's right.
Culture, there's different cultures. But yeah, so I don't think, I mean, I know it's just not, kids are not born that way. You're not born that way. You're not born to hate people.
Yeah.
Although I think some psychiatrists may argue that.
Well, I think what I would say from a spiritual standpoint, you know, I look at the Word of God and it says that, you know, our hearts are deceitful and desperately wicked. So I think we're born in a sin nature. Okay, we have a sin nature. But
exactly.
I don't believe, and I totally agree with you, I don't think we're just born to you come out of the mother's room. We come out of our mother's room crying. We don't come out saying, "Hey, how can I help you, Mom? I'm sorry. I hurt you, but can I get you a popsicle or something, Mom?" You know, no. They come out screaming, crying. Come out, you know, feed me.
Hug me.
I'm scared. So I think but like you said, it's learned behavior from that point on. It's that learned behavior of, and then what have you been feeding that child emotionally, spiritually, educationally? And you know what? It breeds a system. If it's the wrong stuff or the right stuff, it's a system. There's a way of doing it, I think, in a loving, caring, compassionate way, understanding people. And striving to understand before you're understood. And I think that that's one of the other issues. Do you think that, you know, we've had this dialogue and we're wrapping up here, but do you think that, let me ask you this, why do you think it is so difficult to have these kind of conversations? Why do you think, because, I mean, I could even hear tonight when I introduced you, there was this, I'm just telling you, there was a cringe and so I could feel it. I mean, there was like, what's he going to do? What's he going to say? And he called her a black woman. I'm the most simplistic guy you'll ever want to meet in your life. I do not believe in trying to overthink and overanalyze. I can't, you're darker skinned than I am. In fact, I'm red. I burn, but that's the pigment of my skin. That doesn't mean that's who I mean, does that make sense? And I think that people were, some folks were really concerned that, well, what's going to be said tonight or what's going to be shared tonight? And maybe there's even some conviction going on. I don't know.
Yeah. I was a little concerned.
Yeah. Well, you were just scared. You were just nervous to talk. You were dealing with the number one fear, a phobia. That's the fear of public speaking.
Right. So. That is not me.
No, it wasn't racism you were dealing with, though.
So, Shannon, I'm sorry. What was the question?
Well, I think that going back to the systematic and thinking about nurture versus nature, and with that, I think that you were talking about what psychologists would maybe say, oh, there's a nurture nature type mentality. Mm-hmm. And you said that, you know, we're not born that way. What, at the end of the day, how do people, you know, how can people get out of that? How can people change that mindset? And what does it take? And I want to talk, because you're married to a white person. Right?
Absolutely.
And you said you've been around white people majority of your life. And you said your dad kind of protected you in that regard. And you said you liked him and you didn't like him for it. So explain that. Go deeper in that. And then how do we change? What can we do? And I know we're not going to be able to wrap it up. And we're going to have to do this again. But we need this dialogue. How can we do a better job in changing our hearts and minds?
This right here. Open dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to start somewhere, and it's got to, you know, empathy and understanding, and being able to sit like this and just talk and understand, you know, you understand what I go through and me understand what you go through. It's got to start somewhere. And I really think, communication and being open and honest. And I think that's part of the problem because people don't want to hear it.
Right.
People don't want to hear that we're still in this position as we were 50 or 75 years ago. It hasn't changed. People don't want to hear that. People don't want to hear that. It scares me sometimes that my sons, if they, you know, get stopped or something, they don't want to hear that. So I think that's it. I mean, it's got to start with communication. Mm. It's got to start with faith and, you know, I really believe that. That's why again, the protests are great, but I really think, this like here, like having things prayer, like that, prayer and just, and understanding, being a good human.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. Just being a good human.
Right.
You asked me about my dad and to explain that, I love my dad because, you know, I'm not going to lie, because he moved us out of a place in Indianapolis where we were able to get more opportunity and better education and that type of thing.
He was looking at to better you.
Yes, he was looking at to better, you know, and so and I think that's why he did that. On the other side of that, though, when I first, we've been in Indianapolis, like I said, when I was in second grade, came to Lafayette and West Lafayette. I graduated from West Lafayette. My first experience, like going back into the Black culture, like just not being the minority and being in a Black culture. So that was even different for me back then, because then I'm not Black enough.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
the Uncle Tom syndrome.
I wasn't Black enough.
You're white.
Right. Yeah. The way I spoke. Even I have a stepsister who's from Mississippi, and she came to visit, and she was surprised that I was Black. She said, she goes, I didn't know you were Black. I'm like, yeah. I, you know, so for a long time I was, I'm not white, you know, obviously I'm not white, but I didn't fit here either because I wasn't Black enough.
Right.
Wow. So it was a little bit of a struggle for me for a little bit to find my place. You know, my mom was like, you just need to be you. Just because you don't talk the slang and you don't dress the dress or whatever doesn't mean.
Right.
But no, whatever you're going to say, I'm Black. My skin is Black. Whatever I mean, it's not going to change. I'm proud of being a Black woman.
Man.
I love my skin color and my race, whatever.
Right.
But so that's what that was with my dad.
Sure.
I felt like, I think I may have lost. I lost out of some of the cultural diversity with
you had
the Black community.
The best of both worlds and the kind of the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it, because that's what it was. Mm. And
but it made you like you said.
Did.
Yeah.
And I am. I've come to accept, and I still get told that you're not Black enough. You're not Black enough.
But then somebody screams that.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Yeah, you sure look like it. Well, so. Thaya, I think that the key, we could go on and talk. We got to wrap things up. We're coming to the end of the show. But I would love to have you back. I'd love to have some continued dialogue. And, you know, maybe this is an opportunity that we sit down maybe with Casper Media, Radio Mom. These are the stations that carry the E-Factor. And then we have it on our social media. But maybe we have more of a dialogue with some other folks in the room. And we talk about Latino and because I do believe that it is important. But I want to finish today, folks, to just remind you, and I think Thaya would agree with me, as a person of faith and as a believer in Jesus Christ, that your skin, your gender, none of those things really should define you.
Right.
It really, you know, Martin Luther King said it's not it's the context of your heart. It's the character of your heart. It's not, you know, the skin, the cover, your shell.
Right.
And I totally believe that. But I can take it a step further in saying that that should not define you. And I think so many people out there are chasing identity. and they don't realize that they already have one. There is no other Thaya.
And it took, I said, it took me a while to learn that in school.
Amen. And kids are struggling with it every day. Every day. It is a tough struggle. It's a tough struggle. So, folks, you've heard, Thaya Sterrett talking today a little bit about race, a little bit about relationship, and a whole lot about engagement and where we should be as a community. And I just want to challenge you as we close today to make sure that you take the time to engage with people. Find out about them before you judge them, before you call them a name, before you create some kind of mob. Find out what's going on in that person's life. You might just be the change. You might just be the encouragement. You know what? You might be the answer to someone's prayer if you would just seek to understand instead of trying to be understood. Amen. Thaya, thank you so much for joining us today
on the E Factor. Thank you for having me.
No problem. God bless you. Hey, that's the E Factor. Good Lord willing, we'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.